I'd like to thank Rabbi Koren and Rabbi Radinsky for hosting tonight's seminar. In the mid-1980s, there was a man who owned a very successful hair-cutting business in the Midwest of America. He made a nice living for his family, and he charged $20 per haircut. Until one day, Supercuts moved in across the street from him. Now, for those of you who don't know, Supercuts is like the fast food of the haircutting business. So they took out the billboard above their store, and they wrote on their billboard, $7 haircuts, with an arrow pointing right down to their store. This guy starts going out of his mind. He thinks to himself, what am I going to do? I can't charge $7. I'd do a better job than that, but I'm going to lose my business. I won't be able to feed my family. So he goes to this marketing expert, J. Conrad Levinson, and Levinson tells him, no problem, here's what you do. You take out the billboard above your store, and on your billboard, you write, we fix $7 haircuts. And he got his business back. So why did I start out with that great true story from the book Guerrilla Marketing? Because I believe it ties into tonight's goal. Tonight's goal is to take a step towards making the spiritual Holocaust as real as a physical Holocaust. And to make it as motivating, as empowering, as inspiring, and as action-oriented for each and every from Jew. Now, in order to do this, I have to ask a little permission. And that is, I have to shake things up a little bit. Because I have to tell you that my dedication to Sleeping Giant, which is the forebearer of Project Inspire, goes all the way back to 1995 when I was a Talmud originally at Eishon Torah. And I remember going into the Rosh Yeshiva's office of Nachum Weinberg Zitzal, and I said, which would the Rosh Yeshiva rather have? $10 million for Kiruv or 10,000 from Jews reaching out? And his answer surprised me. He said, there's no question I'd rather have 10,000 from Jews reaching out. Back then, I knew the yeshiva needed money, so it was really a big chiddush to me. So I've been zocha over the years to be involved with the Video Inspired and some other things, and to speak for Project Inspire before, and yet I think Rav Noach would agree from his place in Gan Eden right now that we're doing well, yet perhaps we can do even better. And sometimes to do even better, you have to be willing to step up, to shake things up, to think out of the box, to take a risk, to sort of push the status quo, if you will. So that's what I intend to do tonight with everybody here and everybody who will watch the video on TorahAnytime.com or hear a CD, what have you. If we just got word that, God forbid, there was a physical Holocaust going on in Eretz Yisrael, what would we do? We would immediately jump to action. We would send money. We would try to bribe the captors. We would lobby the U.S. government. We would organize marches. We would create an online campaign. We would take massive action. Every single person here would not be able to sleep at night. However, Baruch Hashem, we're not fighting such a battle. We are trying to fight a spiritual Holocaust in a very physical world. And the big challenge is that with a real Holocaust, if you don't act today, the person may not be alive tomorrow. With a spiritual Holocaust, we can justify it by not taking action and saying, you know, what's really going to happen if I don't reach out to this person? What's really going to happen if I don't extend myself, if I don't push myself, if I don't financially support or something? The guy's going to be okay. You know, maybe he'll intermarry, but he could do tshuva, or maybe somebody else will get him. Maybe it's not a good time. We can rationalize in all sorts of ways because we don't see the ramifications of our lack of inactivity. In part one of this three-part series on the psychology of reaching out, I introduced a concept on which I actually started my own seminar company of only two reasons. And the idea is very simple, and I'm going to briefly review it. And that is that there are only two reasons why people don't do anything in life. Either they have too much fear, or they lack perceived value. They have too much fear, or they lack perceived value. And I'm just going to review what we spoke about a year and a half ago in part one of this series. Let's just suppose that we ran a marketing company. And our marketing company had a goal. And that goal was we were going to take a plank of wood 100 yards long and 6 feet wide and put it on this street, on Fourche Road, and have the police close it off. We were going to offer $100 for every person that would walk across the length of the plank put on the road. How many out of 100 people would do it? If we offered it to 100 people and offered them $100, most of the 100 people would walk across the plank, take the $100 bill, say thank you very much. Now let's suppose that we just changed one factor. We took that 100 yard long plank and we perched it on top of what used to be the World Trade Centers. Now how many people are going to walk across that plank? Very few. Probably a couple of dozen, but that's about it. Why? What changed? The fear went up massively. That's the only thing that changed. The fear went up massively. So let's suppose for a second, and again, I'm just giving you a quick review. To hear this explained in great depth, listen to part one of this year. Let's suppose that our marketing company's goal was to get many more of the 100 people to walk across the plank. What are some of the things that we could do to get them to do it? I'm going to give the answers tonight. Very briefly, we could put walls up on the plank. Would that get more people to do it? Sure. Maybe we could put a net, a very strong net, 10 feet below the plank. Would that get more people to do it? Right. Maybe we could harness the guy in with a helicopter hovering above and it would harness him in so he really couldn't go too far. Would that get more people to do it? Sure. Maybe instead of offering $100, we could offer $100 million. Would more people do it? Sure. Maybe we tell the guy, listen, you're going to be a national hero. Your picture is going to be on the front of every newspaper in the free world as the bravest person alive if you do this. Would that get more people to do it? Sure. We could go on and on and on. Just like we say, all 613 mitzvos fit in the Aseret Dibros somewhere. Every excuse a person will ever give you for not doing something in life is either they have too much fear or they lack perceived value. Because when we put the walls up on the plank, we decrease his fear. When we put the net under, we decreased his fear. When we harnessed him in, we decreased his fear. When we offered him $100 million instead of $100, we increased his perceived value. When we offered to put his picture everywhere, we increased his perceived value. And we could go on and on and on, and you'll see it's unbelievable, it holds true. And like Chesky mentioned earlier, it holds true in business, etc., etc. I conduct these seminars for businesses who want to increase sales. Anybody that wants to get somebody to do something, clients to buy more, donors to give more money, single people to get married, whatever it is, we apply this formula and we have some fun with it. Now, it's important to note, I'm not standing up here tonight saying that I have all the answers on how to make a spiritual holocaust as real as a physical one. I don't. I have a framework that we're going to apply, and hopefully we're going to come back here in about a month for part three, the third and final part of this series, The Psychology of Reaching Out, and apply what we're learning tonight and really drive it home. I'll give you a simple example. 5 years ago, I got a call from a young man in his late 30s, and he said to me, Proctor, we have a group of older single guys here in Passaic. We've been dating for a bunch of years, and, you know, really not making too much progress. You've been married now for 5 or 6 years. Could you come give us a little inspirational talk? So I said, sure. And I went to Rabbi Eli Gwertz's home in Passaic. Turns out that's where it's being hosted. And there were about 12 guys there. I knew most of the 12 guys. And I said, guys, there are only two reasons why you're not married. Either you have too much fear or you lack perceived value. That's all it is. So I said, okay, guys, what are you afraid of? And it was silence. And the first guy gets up his courage and he says, well, what if it doesn't work out? Okay, we wrote that on the board. What if it doesn't work out? Well, what if I'm not going to be a good father? Okay, not going to be a good father. Well, what if I can't afford it? Okay, what if I can't afford it? And we went through a whole long list of fears. And then I said, okay, guys, what's your perceived value in getting married? Why do you want to get married? Silence. And the first guy said, well, it's a mitzvah. Okay, it's a mitzvah. You're supposed to do it. Okay, you're supposed to do it. Good. Anything else? Silence. Finally, we got one or two little more ideas out of him. And I said, guys, can you agree with me that if somebody has this much fear and this little perceived value about doing something, it's probably going to be a long time before they do it. Absolute silence from all 12 guys. Okay? Turns out, thank God, that was a very breakthrough seminar for a bunch of them. A number of them have gotten married and started families off of that. I can't claim that it was only that, but perhaps it just helped them one little step forward. So perhaps tonight we're going to be sitting here thinking, you know, we've been involved in Project Inspire for a little while, a long while, what have you. We need to take a big step forward. We need a breakthrough. We need something that can help us mentally to really maximize our potential here. So in part one of this Psychology of Reaching Out series, we talked mostly about decreasing fear. We spoke about the mindset of non-from people. We spoke about that 10 or 20% of them are looking at any one time, 80 or 90% are not, so don't get discouraged. We spoke about how to approach them and so forth. Part two, tonight's goal, is more to build the perceived value, i.e. the relevance of reaching out for any from Jew. And then part three, which will, Ritz Hashem, be either August 23rd or August 30th here, so stay tuned for that, is going to be implementing what we're going to be speaking about tonight in order to take massive action. Because we focused in the past on what to do and how to do it. Project Inspire does a lot of seminars on what to do, what to say, what email to send the person, how to approach them, and how to do it. And we need more seminars on those topics for certain. Yet tonight, we're going to focus on the why to do it. And I'm here to suggest that the more real that each one of us gets with our own personal why, the more effective the what to do and the how to do will be. Because logic doesn't move people, emotion moves people. Logic doesn't move people, emotion moves people. So tonight, I'm up here and I'm willing to be real and I'm willing to be vulnerable. When I was a kid, nobody ever used the word billion. You heard if a guy was very rich, they said the guy's a millionaire, or maybe he's a multimillionaire. You never heard the guy was a billionaire. That was virtually unheard of. Now, a government bailout in the hundreds of billions of dollars is very commonplace. Even trillion-dollar deficits. What's the point? Perhaps we've become numb to statistics. Numbers that we hear that years ago would have shocked us, been unfathomable. Okay, it's 100 billion a year, 200 billion there, we hit a trillion, okay, it's a trillion, okay. Everything will be okay is sort of what we rationalize. Sadly, I believe that some of us are so far, myself included, from being on the Madriga to understand the spiritual destruction that's really going on, that we have to make it more personal if we really want to take action. The statistics also on assimilation have become numbing. Let me give you a simple example on a financial level. Which would motivate a person more? Which would upset you more to take action, whatever that action would be? If I told you that the national debt is $11 trillion, or if I told you that the average family share of that national debt is $110,000 that your family is going to have to pay. Can I just see a quick show of hands? Which gets you more upset, that the national debt is $1 trillion? Can I see hands? Or that your family share that you're going to have to pay the taxes is $110,000. So for those of you at home, and those of you who couldn't see, we had one hand that said the $11 trillion, and we had about 25 hands that said the $110,000. Isn't that interesting? And that's part of the lesson for tonight. The more personal we make something, the more action we're going to take. Now, one advantage of being up here is that whilst I can see all of you at one time, if you're all focused on me, you're all only looking at me. You're not looking at each other. So I'm going to take advantage of that tonight, and we're going to do some exercises that I think should be very interesting. It's actually the first time I'm doing it in a group like this, and I'm really interested to see how it goes up, but I think it's going to be fun. Now, for those of you who are listening to this on a CD, I'm going to try to repeat the questions and the answers, and for those of you on the video, you won't see anybody. So guys in the audience, and ladies in the audience, whatever answers you give me, please answer openly and honestly. Don't answer what you think I want to hear, what Project Inspire wants to hear. Answer from your heart what the reality is. Okay. So I'm going to ask if each of you should have received a little yellow packet. Maybe, is there a yellow packet that can be handed over to the ladies' side? Oh, did I come over? Great. Excellent. Did anybody here not get one of these yellow packets? We need one in the front for a gentleman here, please. Whoever's coming in, gentlemen here, please. And there. Maybe you can put some yellow packets in the back there. Okay. Inside your yellow packet, you're going to find a couple of things. One, you're going to see a little advertisement, which we're speaking about. We'll speak about it in a second. And number two, you're going to see scorecards. Some of you have 8.5 by 11 sheets, and some of you have these smaller scorecards. But they're numbered 1 through 10. What are we going to do with this? I'm going to ask for your feedback as we do almost like a focus group from the stage here. So for example, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to ask you to grade or rate the answer by holding up your card. If your answer is a 1 out of 10, you'll hold up a 1. What happened? Okay? If it's a 3, you hold up the 3. Simple. Now, in your packet, there was this unbelievable ad that I've excerpted from a fascinating study called Israel in the Age of Eminem. E-M-I-N-E-M. Eminem is like a rap singer from a few years ago. The Charles and Andrea Bronfman Foundation wanted to know what will motivate young American teenagers to care about Israel. It's a fascinating online study. It's about a 60-page study. I highly encourage anybody to read it. And one of the things they do in there is put sample advertisements to see how they motivate or do not motivate people. This ad, which I changed very slightly just for our purposes, is entitled, "At What Point Do You Get Angry?" So what I'm going to ask is there are 6 little statements here, and I'm going to ask as I read each one, first I'll read all 6 statements, and then I'm going to go back through them one by one and ask you to hold up your little scorecard. At what point do you get angry? Now, this is targeted towards, ideally, an American person reading an advertisement. It doesn't necessarily have to be a teenager. It could be any one of us, right? And it's regarding, this ad was taking place at a time when there were bus bombings going on in Israel. Okay? God forbid. Number one, at what point do you get angry? Number one, a bus explodes in Israel. Number two, a bus explodes in Canada. Number three, a bus explodes in the next state. Number four, a bus explodes 2 towns over. Number five, a bus explodes in your own neighborhood. And number six, a bus explodes in your eye. So now, everybody take out your cards, please, and let's go one by one. And I'm going to summarize the average at a quick glance of what I see. A bus explodes in Israel. If a person were reading a newspaper or hearing a news report, and they heard a bus explodes in Israel, being honest, how motivated would you be to take action immediately on that news and do something? Okay, can everybody hold up a number? Wow. This is a real audience that cares a lot. The average, I would say, is about 6. The average is about a 6. We have some 1s and 2s. We have some 8s and 9s. It's about a 6 over average. Okay. Next one. A bus explodes in Canada.
10 is the highest?
10 is the highest, yes. 10 is the highest. Okay, number two, a bus explodes in Canada on a scale of 1 to 10. Wow. Okay, a bus explodes in Canada. That got an average of about a 1 or a 2. Okay, number two, a bus explodes in the next state. In the next state. Okay, that's a 2 or a 3. Now, I'm actually going to have to add in a statement here because I see that this is going in a very interesting way. I believe that what the ad was hoping to instill is that it's the same group of people that would be blowing up the bus in Israel or in Canada or in the next state, etc., etc. It's the same Ishmaelim that would be blowing up the bus, okay? So that, the bus explodes in the next state, got about a 3, okay? Next one, a bus explodes 2 towns over. On a scale of 1 to 10, how angry would you be? That's about a 7. That's an average of a 7, okay? Next one, a bus explodes in your neighborhood, blown up by Arabs, God forbid. Okay, that's a 9. That's an average of a 9. Okay, and last one, a bus explodes in your eye, God forbid. A bus explodes in your eye. Okay. That's a 10. That's a 10. Virtually everybody gave that one a 10. Okay. Good. Now, what is the lesson? The lesson to me is that you take action when it personally affects you. When it personally touches you, it personally affects you, that's when a person takes action. That's going to be the mantra for tonight's seminar. If you walk away with only one thing, please remember that one sentence. You take action when it's personally affecting you. For example, some people say that cancer is a Holocaust today. Cancer is a Holocaust. I definitely heard that. Have you noticed how many of the biggest donors to cancer research are people who have been personally touched by cancer, either they themselves or their family? It could be that last month, they were asked for a donation, they gave something, not too much, then God forbid, their child gets diagnosed, God forbid, all of a sudden they get asked for a donation, and all of a sudden the pocketbook starts to open. Why? Because it affected them personally. And that's our goal of making the spiritual Holocaust as real as a physical one, is to make it real. If we're on a level where we're so spiritually sensitive that intermarriage and assimilation bothers us, then we'll do what they did a generation ago. They'll sit and they'll read the marriage section of the New York Times and look at all the intermarriages, and they'll sit there and they'll cry. You don't have to raise your hand here, but I'd be very interested to know how many people in this room, and this is a room of doers for Project Inspire, in the last year have sat and read through the intermarriage section or the marriage section of the New York Times and cried and lost a night of sleep over it. I haven't. I don't think there have been too many of us being real about the whole thing. Okay? We're just not at this level. So now, here's where I might get myself into a little trouble, but I think Rudolph would approve. I'd like to read a series of 10 statements that are sometimes quoted in the objective, or with the objective, to motivate us to reach out to non-firm Jews. And I'd like you to hold up again the scorecards on a scale of 1 to 10, being honest, how much do each of these sentences really motivate you? In other words, you hear it and you say, yep, I think about this thing, I tend to, I think about it all the time, I carry it in my consciousness, I walk around, I really reach out, this is what drives me, I can't sleep because of X, Y, Z, and so forth. Okay, number one, 1.4 million Jews practice other religions. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does that motivate you on a daily basis to get involved? Okay, we have about a 6, an average of about a 6. We had some 1s and 2s, we had some 9s and 10s, okay? And
those are the
honest ones. I would suggest, as I'm thinking about it, if there's something that I mentioned that motivates you on a scale that's in the upper end, like 8, 9, 10, like it really gets you, write it down, because that means it personally really bothers you. And that's actually going to be good for what we're talking about tonight. Okay, number two. 100, consider each of these on their own merits. It's not a cumulative thing. Okay. 100,000 Jews a year are lost to assimilation and intermarriage. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does it really bother you, anger you, drive you? Wow. 8. Average of an 8. Very good. Very good. Okay, this is really a group of doers. Third one. Every other Jew marries a Gentile today. Statistically, 50% intermarried. Interesting. Okay, that's about a 9. That's about a 9. Interesting. Okay, next one, number 4. Starting with 100 Reformed Jews today, if we took 100 Reformed Jews today, given their intermarriage rate, after 4 generations, only 8 of them would be Jewish. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does that statistic anger you, motivate you? Wow, that's a 9. That's a 9. Okay? 5. There are only 4,000 full-time Kiruv workers and 5 million non-from in the U.S., so everyone must help. How much does it motivate you when you hear somebody from Project Inspire, whatever, saying, everybody must help? 7. That's a 7. Okay, still good. Okay, good. These are obviously people sitting here who hear the call. They sort of hear the shofar. Okay, next one. There's a kol kore saying, you must do kiruv. Every Jew must do kiruv. On a scale of 1 to 10, when you hear that, how much does it anger you, motivate you, hurt you? So the people that listen to Kedol Yisrael, okay, that's an 8. That's an 8. Very good. That's an 8. Next, if he becomes from, if this non-from person that you're speaking to becomes from, you get the source. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does that motivate you? Wow. Wow. That's a 9. That's a strong 9. Okay, you listen to Project Inspire offices? That's a very big one. You should play that up in your advertisements. Okay, next one. We're all really Hashem's children, and my love for them compels me to reach out. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does that sentence really motivate you? Okay, that's a 6. That's a 6. Good. Next one. Hashem is in pain from his children being off the derech. Hashem is in pain from his children being off the derech. How much does that sentence motivate you? That's an 8. That's an 8. 8.5. The Russian judge said 8.5. Okay, last one. Deep inside each Jew's neshama, he wants to connect to Torah mitzvos. Scale of 1 to 10. That's a 7. We had a bunch of 9s and 10s, but we had some lower ones. That's a 7, maybe 7.5. What's that? Very, very interesting. Thank you very much. Was that a fun exercise, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for participating in that. That was very interesting and very helpful. And hopefully the offices of Project Inspire will use that to even hone their advertisements and so forth even greater. You're doing a great job. Who mostly reaches out today? I was thinking about this. Who mostly reaches out today? Well, number one, professional kiruv workers, for sure, because they get paid for that. Number two, I would say, those who were raised in the Lubavitch philosophy. They really, really, really think about it all the time. Number three, people who are naturally warm. Number four, people who are naturally outgoing. And number five, people who are really, really proud of their Yiddishkeit, for whom it just feels like it's really, really overflowing. You know, they tell sales managers, when you're going to hire a salesperson, some of the top qualities to look for are, number one, they should be very money motivated. They should really want to make money. And number two, they should really be convinced of the value of the product or service for which you're hiring them for. So the more that we're convinced, we're not salespeople, obviously. There is an analogy here, though. The more that we're convinced in the great value of what we have, the more we'll just come naturally to share. And then finally, the people who share today, the people who reach out, in my experience, are those on a very high spiritual madriga. Those who feel the spiritual holocaust, and they really deeply feel a need to reach out. One of the best examples I can think of is our friend Rabbi Daniel Corey. It's just a wonderful example and role model for all of us, myself included. By the way, he didn't tell you in that little introduction that when I told him he has to go to AJOP, the Kiruv conference down in Baltimore, he said, I don't know, should I go? I don't know, can I go? I said, it's very simple. If you don't go, I'm not talking to you anymore. Okay, that's it. I think that was a makabah patish for me. Baruch Hashem, we had a fun time. Okay, for the 80% of us who are not in those above categories, we need to focus on being real with the difference that reaching out makes to us. So I see that there are two ways that we can go with this. Number one, we can try to make the frum belt more sensitive to the spiritual realities of life. For example, someone said to me, you know, it could be that it's worse in the spiritual realm that turning on a light on Shabbos is worse than physically injuring somebody. It's possible. Spiritually, that is possible. If you ask most of us, are we more real with that? That's a good question. I don't think most people are really real with that. It's a tough sell. Or we can focus on how assimilation affects you and your family and why you should be concerned for your own reasons. For your own reasons. How to make a spiritual holocaust as real as a physical one? What I came up with is we have to figure out how to make it real for each one of us. Again, I'm not standing up here saying I have the answers. I don't have the answers. What I'm going to recommend is that each person in the next 30 days sits and thinks about their own answer for this situation and emails it to me, and we can have a dialogue, and we can go back and forth. I think by doing that on Cheshbon HaNefesh, everybody will come up with something for themselves. Because we live in a selfish generation. And therefore, I believe the best way to make a spiritual holocaust as real as a physical one is to focus on how the spiritual holocaust affects me and my family. We have to make it relevant for the average frum Jew. This is the goal. I want to give you a simple sales story that drives this point home. There was a real estate salesman who brought a couple into a home. And he showed them around the home. And the man was, of course, trying to knock the real estate salesman down in price. So everything he would show them, the guy would say, he'd say, look at this nice dining room. And the guy'd say, no, the walls are chipping. And the light sockets don't look so good. And then they'd bring him into the bathroom. And the salesman would say, look at the bathroom, it's spacious. And the husband would say, ah, the toilet looks like it needs to be fixed up. And the glass here is not doing so well. Well, finally they get up to the top floor. And they go into one of the bedrooms. And the woman looks out the back window of the bedroom and sees a flowering cherry tree. And she says, oh, honey, I've always wanted to live in a house with a flowering cherry tree. So the real estate salesman, very smart, he picked up on that. And the husband tells the wife, shh, 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 you know, trying to knock down the price. So they go into the next room, and the salesman says, hey, look at this beautiful walk-in closet over here. And the guy says, no, it's not that big, and the light doesn't seem to work. And the salesman says, yes, that's true, but if you just turn this way from the closet, you can look at the back window and see that beautiful flowering cherry tree. Then they went in the back downstairs somewhere, and the salesman said, hey, look at this beautiful kitchen over here. And the man said, oh, it looks like the faucet doesn't work. And the salesman said, yes, that's true, but you notice, looking out the kitchen window, you can see that beautiful flowering cherry tree. And of course, he knew what was the hot button for the wife, and the family did end up buying the house. The point is that if we can find the one thing, the almost unique selling proposition, we call it in marketing, that will motivate each person individually, and they stay focused on that as what drives them, we're going to be much, much more successful. Thank you very much.
Hello.
So the goal is to discover our own personal why and to keep it in our consciousness in front of us every day. Our why is our perceived value. Back to the formula of only two reasons. There are only two reasons why people don't do anything. Either they have too much fear or they lack perceived value. I really believe that the more that we can focus ourselves on what is our own perceived value, what is our reason why, the more effective we're going to be, the more we're going to reach out, the more we're going to break through our fears. I keep saying the same point over and over again, but that's the goal of the seminar, is for you to walk out and say, I get it. Okay, Proctor, I get it. Tony Robbins, a very famous motivational speaker, says the quality of our life comes down to the quality of questions that we ask ourselves. So I like to recommend that we each ask ourselves, why do I care? Why do I care if there's mass assimilation? Why do I care if there's so much intermarriage? Why do I care if these people are being missionized, etc., etc.? If we don't have a great answer for that, I suggest that between now and Rosh Hashanah, Elul is coming, it's a great time to sit down and do a little Cheshbon HaNefesh and try to figure out what is my personal reason. In other words, what difference does it make to me, to my life, if all this assimilation happens? The people in this room, based upon the answers, the numbers, the scorecards that you gave me, seem to be at a very, very good level. My question is, what about the other 98% of Klal Yisrael that's not in the room, from Klal Yisrael? How do we touch each one of them? I believe this is part of the answer. So we can make this an exercise, and perhaps Project Inspire can promote it, that the idea is for every Jew before Rosh Hashanah to spend 10 minutes figuring out what is my why and how I can find it. A simple sentence to do is to fill in the blank and say, if millions of Jews assimilate and intermarry over my lifetime, The difference it makes in my life is blank. If you can fill in the blank, you're doing well. If millions of Jews assimilate and intermarry over my lifetime, the difference it makes in my life is blank. If you have a strong reason, that's a good thing. The goal of part three of this seminar series, which is going to take place in Hashem in about a month, is that each person walks away with what motivates them and why reaching out is important to them every single day. So remember, when do people take action? They take action and reach out when it becomes personal. I'm going to close a little bit, and then I'll open it up for a couple of questions with one more simple story. I like these sales stories, and I hope you like them a little bit too. About 40 years ago, there was a new invention. It was called plexiglass. It was unbreakable glass, shatterproof glass. It was a complete revelation. So they had an annual sales convention, and the top salesman won the award, and he brought him up on stage, and they said, "What did you do? You outsold everybody." So he said, "It's very simple. I would walk into a customer with a little sample piece of plexiglass and a little rubber hammer, called a Valtine hammer, and I'd say to the guy, 'You want to see a piece of glass that doesn't break?' And the guy says, 'I don't believe it.' So you put the glass down on the guy's table, I'd take the hammer, I'd smash it, the guy would cover his eyes, and he'd look and he'd say, 'That's unbelievable.' And I'd pull out my sales pad and I'd just start writing up the order and say, 'How much do you want?' So, of course, the sales managers of the company got very excited. 'Hey, this is a great idea. We're going to get all the salespeople samples in these little rubber hammers. That's great.' So the next year, they come back to the convention. This guy's still number one salesman in America by far. And they said, 'Now what did you do?' He said, 'Well, the more personal, the more relevant you can make something for somebody, the more effective it's going to be.' So I'd walk into the guy's office. I'd say to him, 'You want to see a piece of glass that doesn't break?' The guy says, 'I don't believe it.' So I put the glass down on his desk, I'd hand him the hammer, and I'd let him smash the thing, and then when he saw that it didn't break, he'd say, 'That's unbelievable,' and I'd just start writing up the order. The lesson, the more personal we make the experience, the more action we're going to take. Again, I didn't come here tonight to tell you I have the answers. I don't have the full answers on how to make the spiritual Holocaust as real as the physical Holocaust. What I would like to do is suggest that here's what each of us need to do next over the next 30 days until we come back for part three. Each person here and those listening by CD or video needs to find that unique motivating reason for themselves. People, when I ask the questions, and those of you at home, you can play along. If you have a 9 or 10 reaction, that may be a strong motivating reason for you. On the sheet that I handed out over here, the "At what point do you get angry?" it has my contact information, and I'll read it for those of you listening by CD. I would like to offer that anybody listening to this, please should think about what their unique motivating reason for being involved in reaching out on a regular basis is, and email it to me or call it into my voicemail. The voicemail gets filled out quickly, so I'd much, much prefer to email it to me. In the subject line, just write Project Inspire, and please send it to Alan, A-L-A-N, @ onlytworeasons.com, O-N-L-Y, the number 2, and the word reasons, R-E-A-S-O-N-S.com. The voicemail is 914-588-4267, 914-588-4267. Then hopefully I'll get a bunch of responses between now and 30 days from now, and when we come back for part 3, we'll tie it all together. Rav Noach Weinberg used to daven to Hashem, and he used to say, "Please, Hashem, help me to want it badly enough." Because we can accomplish anything when we have a big enough reason why. With that, I'd be happy to take questions. Thank you very much. We have a few minutes for questions if anybody has any.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Are there more people leaving Judaism, or more people coming through
Kirov to Judaism? It's a great question. Are there more people leaving Judaism, or are there more people coming in through Kirov? I don't know the official statistics because I'm not that in tune with it, but I have definitely heard from a number of sources there certainly are more people, unfortunately, leaving Judaism. Yes, I've definitely heard that. However, I will share with you that in my Hashkafa, I believe that one of the greatest ways to keep people from leaving Judaism is to pair up in the proper way with halakhic guidance a person who's struggling with their Yiddishkeit with somebody who's coming the other direction, with a Baal Tshuva. I'll tell you just a quick story. One of the things that absolutely blew my mind when I was at Isha Torah, we were all there. I started Aleph Beis when I was 31. We were struggling to break our teeth on Chumash and Gemara and so forth. And we used to see these guys from the Mir Yeshiva come in with their nice jackets and their nice hats, and they would sit in the Aish Beis Medrash. And I'd say to these guys, what are you guys doing here? We're barely davening. We're struggling, some of us. We're new. We're trying. This isn't easy, but whatever. You guys can fly through all this learning. And they said, no, you don't get it. We love it here. It's so inspiring for us to see you guys who maybe came from the corporate world or came from somewhere else, and you're sitting here struggling and trying to learn. It reinforces to us, in a certain way, the value that we have. It just gives us a seat, but we just sit here sometimes, and we watch you guys, and we listen to you guys. Sometimes we're able to learn with you guys. And it's an unbelievable shidduch. Rav Noach Orlowitz told me that the shidduch is that the FFB gives Torah and stability to the non-from person, and the non-from person gives inspiration to the from person. That's the shidduch. Yes, sir.
With all the unfortunate intermarriage that's going on now, how, when you want to do kiruv to an individual, his name is Frank Goldberg or something like that, how do you know you're trying to be makar of a Jew? I guess down the line you could say that he's half Jewish because his father is Jewish. But I mean, you have to be step one, step two. How do you determine his genealogy?
It's a great question. The question was, how do you determine his genealogy? I remember as far back as about 1998, Rabbi Mati Berger said that when he was at Isha Torah in the 1970s, that when kids would come in with the name Goldberg, he was almost certain that they were Jewish. But by the late 90s, when they came in with the name Goldberg, he was almost certain that they were not Jewish. Because the father was Jewish and had the name Goldberg, the mother was not Jewish, and of course, with the high intermarriage and so on. How do you determine the genealogy? I would say, just go with the flow as much as the person wants to go and let it come out in its own natural course. Because if early on, if you challenge somebody, wait a sec, I want to be makar of you, I want to be nice to you, I want to invite you for Shabbos, but let me just check. Your mother, she's the Jewish one, right? Or she had a reform conversion, a conservative. If you start doing that, then forget it. Yes, sir.
Since a larger percentage of intermarriage and assimilation is occurring in the quote-unquote out-of-town communities, wouldn't it make sense to take groups of young people or young couples and send them out in terms of supporting kollels that go out to these communities? It's so difficult for a single rabbi in these out-of-town communities to really have much of a change versus sending out a kiruv kollel and have 6, 8, 9 couples go out to a community and try to get the large Jewish community to sponsor these kollels.
It's a great question. The question was, for the people listening on video, you probably couldn't hear the question. The question was, isn't it a good idea to get 6 or 8 or 10 from people from, let's say, the New York area, to go out to an area that there's only one kiruv rabbi or something, to support the kiruv rabbi and start a kiruv kollel? So I think it's a great answer. For sure it's a good idea. I think two things happen. Number one, Torah Masorah through Project Seed sends out groups of approximately 6, 8, 10 from people. They may even be teenagers or young 20s to go out there in the summertime for a couple of months. Usually it's a few, 3 to 8 weeks, depending, I think. And they go out and they mechazik the community. And in a certain way, they're like testing the water to see if the Balabatim in particular might really like this. And then they can have a meeting and say, okay, guys, we just brought this group of 6 or 8 or 10 from guys out. Wasn't it great to learn with them? Wasn't it really amazing? If we just put together X dollars, we can sponsor a few of them to come back and move out here and so forth. So they do that. And there is a whole new initiative that's about to be announced, but can't mention it from here, that there's going to be a whole new push to get more and more of these outreach kollels, kiruv kollels, to go out. It's definitely a big push.
That's the out-of-town places helping that's not coming from New York, that's not coming from us. We're relying on them to help themselves.
That's FFBs in particular coming from, let's say, Lakewood in particular. Sometimes near Israel, but Lakewood is, of course, a good epicenter of yeshiva guys to go out to the outlying communities around America.
think that the concept of creating an ad hoc committee for Project Inspire might be a powerful message? In other words, something that puts everybody on the team as opposed to just attending a SHIELD or organizing something in a SHIELD?
So a close friend of mine from North Miami Beach who hasn't been...
Repeat the question.
The question was, would it be a good idea to create like an ad hoc committee, like a core group unit, if I understand, of people who are very committed to reaching out for Project Inspire? So the answer is, Rabbi Daniel Koren runs one of the most successful core group committees in America here in Muncie, and you've just elected yourself to run one in North Miami Beach. Everybody, Koren, we motion you to go over there. We've got a new core group in North Miami Beach at Rabbi Ephraim Eliyahu Shapiro's shul.
I'm looking forward to that, Sister.
Excellent. I think we have time for a couple more questions. Yes?
Usually people show success in the case of something that you're planning. Here we're looking to find motivation when things don't go well. How could we use, or how would we entertain finding situations, families that have experienced intermarriage or other forms of assimilation that have been torn apart, and somehow make it more real to us by exposing us more to those types of experiences?
Great question. How can we take the quote-unquote
victims,
good word, victims of intermarriage, etc., and use it as a way to motivate us to do more? I'll give you a great example of what you're speaking about, Gershon. I don't think it was ever an official tape, but Rabbi Eli Gwertz from Partners in Torah, I used to work at Partners in Torah, once recorded a tape that was, I almost felt like it's James Bond or something like that. It started out by Rabbi Gwertz. He's interviewing this young lady. Of course, she doesn't say her name, where she's from, anything. And it's like, okay, what would you like to tell us? That's how the whole tape starts. She says, well, you know, I started dating this non-Jewish guy, and he was really nice to me, and it was really good, and this and that. And then she says, but, and then what happened? Well, and then this happened, and then we got married. He said he was going to convert, or he said he'd be very open to Judaism. We could raise our children Jewish. He was very open to, and then what happened? Well, then we got married and everything was fine until we had a child. And she goes through this whole thing, and it's like just drawing the, it's her whole, obviously it's very real. You can feel this woman's like shakiness. She's almost like afraid that the non-Jewish spouse is going to find out about this, the secret tape that was made. She ends up saying, and then we were at the holiday party at their family, and I saw some of the guys had tattoos, some of his brothers. And I started to drink, and then it came out about those dirty Jews, and I was shocked. And she, one of the quotes she said in the day, she said, and everybody loves a Jew until they're in your own family. That's what the thing she said. And it was like, it was such a riveting tape. So Gersh, I was actually thinking about that earlier today. Maybe Project Inspire could put together, go to Rabbi Gwertz and get a hold of that tape, and do things like that that really show the damage that can result, the carnage, unfortunately, that can result from intermarriage. It doesn't always end up in a nice, happy situation. Maybe that could be motivated. All right.
Well, Project Inspire, how big is it right now, and how much nationally organized is it?
So, Rabbi Koren, Project Inspire is looking to expand to Phoenix, and Farley over here is potentially volunteering. He's a real doer. Excellent. So,
officially, we have 14,000 people on a database.
14,000 people on a day-to-day basis. Wow.
I don't know the exact numbers, but I think it's around that.
Wow.
So they're with thousands, and it's quite nationally known now.
Wow. Always looking for new ground, though. And Northwest is a great place.
Phoenix,
absolutely.
After Miami.
Both. You can do both at the same time. Anybody like to speak, please contact Rabbi Koren. Again, please email me your insights, questions, Alan, A-L-A-N, at only two reasons, O-N-L-Y, and the number two, R-E-A-S-O-N-S.com. Thank you very much for that.